Good evening. The primary goal of tonight's gathering is to pay respect and honor to the memory of Morenu v'Rabenu, Harav Aharon Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. And that's as it should be. But it's an iffy proposition. We have articulate, thoughtful speakers who are all close to Morenu Zatzal and who will be able to share insights and feelings. But can we really add to the kavod of somebody like Rav Aharon Lichtenstein? So I'll admit to a secondary goal. And that is to bring some comfort to us, the mourners. Since Monday morning, I found it hard to be alone, and I've noticed it in others. Around yeshiva, in Alon Shvud, in Shul and Efrat, you see people gathered together, telling stories, sharing Torah from Rav Aharon, because it makes us feel better. We are individuals in pain. We're a yeshiva in pain. We're a community in pain. And sharing that in a group is cathartic and comforting. And that too is part of tonight. I knew that this Shabbos would be a difficult one, particularly Kriyat HaTorah. I'd been to the Shiva house on Thursday morning, and when Dov Carroll read Bezot Yavo Aharon El HaKodesh, people cried. Okay, I didn't remember exactly how often the word Aharon comes up in the parsha, and on Shabbos it was striking. V'lakach Aharon, v'kriv Aharon, v'samach Aharon, over and over again. It was hard, but I was more or less prepared. What surprised me was how hard Kedoshim was. Said another way, I felt Rav Aharon's presence more in Kedoshim than in Achremos. It seemed like every pasuk was talking about him. Ish imova aviv tiro. Who had more mora av than Rav Aharon? Lifnei iver lo titein michshol. Who gave better advice? Who did people go to? Lo telech rachil b'amecha. Would Rav Aharon ever think of? Lo tikom v'lo titot b'nei amecha. V'ahavta l'reacha kamocha. Every pasuk in Kedoshim seemed to remind me of our Rebbe. But no pasuk more so than the first pasuk. Kedoshim tihiyu le'elokeichem. Kedoshim tihiyu ki kadosh ani Hashem elokeichem. What better pasuk to describe our Rebbe? And Rav Lichtenstein Zatzal once asked on that pasuk, what does the word ki mean? And he said, some assume it means kimo, like, in the sense mahu afata. But Rav Lichtenstein said it was descriptive of God. God is Kedusha Ila'it, the highest form of Kedusha, and our ability to generate Kedusha stemmed from the closeness we felt to God and our ability to draw Kedusha from God. I want to be careful how I say this, but to me, part of the loss I feel is that Rav Lichtenstein served as a source of Kedusha for us. The closer we felt to him, the more we saw him, the more inspired, and yes, the holier we felt. And now, we individually and as a community are struggling with the loss of that source of Kedusha. And so we gather tonight to talk about the Kedusha of our Rebbe in the Achremot sense of Bein Olam Lamakom, and the Kedoshim sense of Bein Olam Lachavero, and to try to come to grips with what we've lost, and maybe also as a tentative first step forward, and trying to figure out how we move forward. First speaker, it's my great honor to call on Rabbi Julius Berman, a close friend and confidant of Rav Lichtenstein for over 50 years.
Zal Zolti, Zal, the Rav Roshi of Yerushalayim, was Masbid his chaver from Yeshivat Hebron, Rav Elimelech Bar Shaul, the Rav Roshi of Rehovot. He commenced his hesped with a quotation from the hesped of David HaMelech for Yonosan. Tsar li olecha, ochi Yonosan, noamti Na'amto limyo. I am distressed over you, my brother Yonosan. You were so pleasant to me. Rav Zolti focused upon the choice by David HaMelech of the word ach, brother, in referring to Yonosan. He could understand chaber, rea, yedid nefesh. That all made sense. But ach, brother? No matter how close a friendship the two may have had, he simply was not a brother. Rav Zolti answered his own question. The key to the ach relationship was not just the fact that they come from the same parent, but it's much more. As Rav Zolti put it, ach ein lo tmuva. A brother has no exchange. There's no substitute. There's no replacement. When one loses a brother, he simply loses a brother, and that's it. It's over. There is no way to transfer the relationship to another. Ach, ein lo tmuva. That, added Rav Zolti, reflected his feeling of loss upon the passing of his chaver from Hebron, Elimelech Bar Shaul, Zatzal. It is in that sense that I stand before you this evening. And say, with their barons, as Dora Melech said about Yonosan, Sarli Olecha, Bachi Aaron, Na'amti Li Meod. How do you describe in a few words Rav Aaron Lichtenstein? Brilliance as a Torah scholar, a pedagogue beyond compare, extraordinary piety, courage and selflessness, clarity of vision and purpose. His level of intellectual honesty was matched only by his quest for emes, a man of true humility and integrity. The former chief rabbi of Britain, Lord Jonathan Sacks, described Rav Aaron as a man of great intellect, equally at home in the literature of the sages and of the world, and a master Talmudist, a profound exponent of Jewish thought, a deep and subtle thinker who loved English literature, of all things, and whose spiritual horizons were vast. But candidly, I leave to others. I'm not here to talk about any of that this evening. As I say, I leave to others more literate and erudite than I to dwell on these attributes of this unique, very unique, multifaceted personality. It is on the next sentence by the chief rabbi that I want to focus for a moment. He goes on, no less impressive was his stature as a human being, caring and sensitive in all his relationships, one who honored his fellows, even when he disagreed with them, a living role model of Jewish ethics at its best. It was 1958, a mere 57 years ago, and we were in the shir of the Rabban Shel Yisrael, Moreinu Rabbeinu Rav Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik Sheik, Zecherinu Tzadik HaKadosh Levrach. We were learning Masechta Shabbos. An event took place that would make its mark on the history of the yeshiva and the Torah world. It started with a rumor. Someone mentioned in the Beis Medrash that he had heard that the Babe Lichtenstein was returning to yeshiva from Harvard, having received his PhD there. Who was Babe Lichtenstein? The old timers told us he was a young Gilui from Chaim Berlin, but now a full-fledged Goan in the truest sense of the word. Indeed, he was already a legend. Moreover, What is equally relevant to me, at least, he was a goyin in midas. Looking back as the years went by, if we can only learn to emulate his conduct as he interacts with people, whether his late parents, that's all, whether four or five generations of his own family, or with Rosh Yeshiva, his in-laws, his friends, with any and every human being that has an occasion to meet him, we would all be richer for it. I must take a moment to speak about his relationship with his parents. And I know that many of you have witnessed it and actually been there yourself when Rav Aaron took care of his blind, almost deaf father, especially during the Yom HaNevi'im, and how he sacrificed his own tefillah to allow his father to be Mekayim, his father's need for tefillah, whether or not halachically his father was required to do so under his conditions. What few know, however, is that Mesiras Nefesh by Rav Aaron to his parents well preceded his father's sickness. Rav Aaron and his wife Tova came on Aliyah before his parents, and they had to be there, stay in America for a while for certain reasons. I became very, very close to his parents almost as a surrogate, because they didn't have their son there anymore. And so I had occasion, quite a few occasions, to relate to his parents. Now, these are parents that are relatively middle-aged, upper middle-aged, but vibrant. Some of them, one of them, I think she, Mrs. Lichtenstein, was about to retire. I don't believe Yechiel Lichtenstein was ready to retire. For whatever reason, they were, as I say, vibrant, well. But they had occasion, as I say, to talk to me on a variety of different reasons. And what can you do? Rav Aaron wasn't there for them. When they talked about their son, Rav Aaron, you saw and felt the overwhelming nachas that they had received from their son during his entire life. It was almost as they lived Olam Haba in Olam Hazeh. That is the relationship that he had with his parents, and that he may or may not realize it, but his parents really, really appreciated it. And they said it in those certain terms again and again and again. Only this past Wednesday, a delegation of Arab workers at the yeshiva came to the yeshiva house to pay their respects, to express in their way their sense of loss of a man who always treated them with respect as fellow human beings. I honestly believe that I can say without equivocation that Rav Aaron fell within that very select group of Talmidei Chachamim that qualified to be allowed into the Beis Medrash of Rabbi Gamliel because, as the Gemara Brachos points out, Tocho Kiboro. His inner character fully corresponded to that of his exterior. Returning to 1958 and the impending return of Rav Aaron to the yeshiva, I was also warned that I shouldn't be misled by his easygoing, friendly nature. On the basketball court, especially under the basket, his elbows were sharp and he plays rough. Honest, but like everything he does, plays to win. What a change he made to the class. While on the one hand he was intentionally laid back and tried to blend into the rest of the class, rarely volunteering initially on his own, on the other hand, it wasn't long before we realized that this student was clearly different. Whenever the Rav was searching for a citation, he would look to Rav Aaron, who would immediately respond with chapter and verse. It soon became clear he was a walking encyclopedia Talmudist. Many, especially this past week, have referred to Rav Aaron's humility and integrity. Others have described his acts of chesed, and I'm confident we can spend all evening just skimming the surface of the kindness he has exhibited through the years. And yet, and I say this most respectfully, I don't consider these acts chesed at all. To my mind, an act of chesed is an act that is something that is l'mala min hateva, something that is a bit or a lot more out of the ordinary, not necessarily expected in the normal course of conduct. But whose normal are we referring to? Certainly not Rav Aaron's. In his normal, kindness was integral. Chesed was not l'mala min hateva. It was part and parcel of his teva, as if it was in his genes. I recall an incident. My brother-in-law, a Talmud of Rav Aaron, when he was still teaching in yeshiva in New York before he came on Aliyah, prior to his Aliyah to Israel, he had arranged to have a pair of tefillin, that is my brother-in-law, a pair of tefillin written in Gush for his son's upcoming bar mitzvah. When the tefillin were ready, he arranged with a sofer to bring the tefillin to Rav Aaron's place at the yeshiva, with the understanding that Rav Aaron would bring them home to Yerushalayim, where he lived then, and my brother-in-law would pick them up at his house. Unfortunately, on the day chosen for the delivery to Rav Aaron, it was raining cats and dogs, a real marvel. That afternoon, my brother-in-law, who was at a hotel, hears a knock on the door. He opens it, and there stands Rav Aaron, appropriately wet from the rain, with the tefillin in hand. My brother-in-law, feeling very uncomfortable, said and wanted to make it clear that the understanding was that he was to go to Rav Aaron's house to pick up the tefillin, not the reverse. Rav Aaron nonchalantly responded that he had to get wet anyway, coming from yeshiva home, so why should both of us get wet? Simple logic, right? That was Rav Aaron. Was that chesed? You would say, of course. But I submit that to Rav Aaron that it was simple yashrus. It was logical, and if so, it was the norm. Teva, not l'mala min hateva. On the other hand, to show consistency or lack of it in Rav Aaron, on the other hand, to try to do a chesed to Rav Aaron was nearly impossible. Before his son Yitzi moved to Muncie, Rav Aaron would stay at our house when he came to New York. The routine would generally be the same. He would take the late night flight from Lod and arrive early in the morning. Upon arrival, he would pick up his large suitcase from baggage claim, and together with his carry-on containing tallis and tefillin and some sforim he needed during the trip on the plane, he would take a taxi directly to the shul I davened in, at that time in Forest Hills, Queens. Usually, when I came to shul, he was already there. After shul, as we were leaving, I would go over to take the suitcase to the car and walk him to the car. But I never succeeded. Invariably, he would insist on taking the suitcase himself. This would happen every time. I didn't have the nerve to tell him that I was personally embarrassed because people would see both of us walk out of shul, he with a large suitcase and a carry-on, and me with the makis in my hand. That's bad enough. Can you imagine that someone might even assume that a Rav Aaron was carrying my suitcase? Once we arrived home, Rav Aaron felt comfortable. He knew exactly where his room was, the setup in the library for him to work at, either on an article for the Orthodox Forum series with which he was continuously involved, or preparing one or more shiurim that he will be delivering while he was in New York, either at the yeshiva, but sometimes in addition in a community setting. The problem for me anyway was in the kitchen. My wife Dottie, knowing what Rav Anan ate and drank, had fully prepared the breakfast so that it was a non-issue. The complication arose when he finished eating. Rav Anan insisted on washing every dish, plate, and utensil he used, returning the uneaten food to the proper place, leaving the kitchen spotless. While my wife naturally was thankful, I was not. What a terrible example he gave in our house. As I relate this thought, I'm reminded of an incident here in Alon Shul. My wife and I were visiting with the Lichtensteins at their home. One of my grandchildren, Daniel, had recently come for his post-high school year at Gush, so we had arranged for him to meet us at the Lichtenstein home at about the time we were ready to leave to go back to Yerushalayim. He insisted on meeting us outside the home because he felt uncomfortable and too shy to actually meet Rav Aaron at home. Well, sure enough, we had not yet finished the visit when the doorbell rang. The Rebbetzin answered the door and insisted that Daniel come in to wait for us. When he came in, a bit reluctantly, he saw us at the table, but no Rav Aaron. Then he turned to the right, looked into the kitchen, and suddenly saw Rav Aaron placing the dirty dishes into the dishwasher. It just blew his mind. All the way to Yerushalayim, he kept ruminating about seeing a gadol such as Rav Aaron involved in such a mundane activity. Of course, from my standpoint, as Chatoyimi Maskar Yom, I wasn't that elated to have my wife observe the incident. Such is life. Since I referred to my grandson Daniel at Gush, I should disclose my personal pride in our family. In our family, there were two generations of Gushies in my direct family and many, many others in the extended family, some of them sitting here today. First, my son Ellie, who spent 2 years post-high school, then a third year after he finished college and before he went on to Columbia Law School and Smicha at Reitz. Then the next generation, grandchildren Josh, who came back to Gush to the Gush Kollel and finished his Smicha studies at Grus, Daniel, Shai, Tamar, and Migdal Oz, and soon, a couple of months, I guess, you will see another one. What was his name, Daddy? Chanoch, who was coming for his post-high school. And then we get to the next generation. My oldest great-grandchild, Kovi, is already living on campus with his parents, Josh and Lonnie, waiting anxiously until the yeshiva drops the age requirements for attendance. You see, he just turned 3. But he's a quick learner. Back to our house. After breakfast, I went off to work at the law firm, and sometimes Dottie had to leave for a short while to shop or honor an appointment. That left Rav Aaron all alone, working on his lectures or shiur. But now he had another task, answering the phone. Imagine the scene, if you will. The phone rings. Rav Aaron answers. Sometimes it's for Rav Aaron, and that's fine. But if it's not, the caller is perplexed. He knows the number he called, but he doesn't recognize the voice. So he asks, "Julie?" And Rav Aaron answers, "He's not home." The obvious question follows. "Who is this?" Answer, "Aaron Lichtenstein." dead silence. The caller is simply nonplussed. It takes a while until finally Navarro says, "Can I take a message?" When my wife comes home, our temporary telephone operator dutifully reports to her all the messages. So tell me, folks, how many of you can afford such a high-priced telephone operator? I've learned from Rav Aaron that friendship may go well beyond the usual social relationship of people. At times, a true friend can even divine the need of another friend and decide on his or her own to do a kindness, even a major kindness, without being asked. My father, Zal, was nifter on Asara B'Teves at the end of 1987. The kvur was to be in the cemetery of Yeshivas Panevesh in Bnei Brak, as arranged years before by my father at the suggestion of our cousin, Rav Shlomo Berman Zatzal, the son-in-law of the Stipler. When Rav Aaron was informed of the Patira, he, on his own, went to pick up two of my father's grandchildren attending Gush at the time, my son Eli and my nephew Ari, who's here tonight, and brought them to the airport to be Malave, my father, to Bnei Brak. There, they stopped in front of the yeshiva. Scores of yeshiva bachurim came out to greet the procession, and at the request of a cousin of mine, Rav Aaron was maspid my father, following which they proceeded to the cemetery for the kvura. I can even tell you the substance of the hesped, but Eli Weber says that doesn't fit into the job description I have for tonight. Of course, shortly thereafter, Rav Aaron, Kedarko Bekoda, showed up at the Hakoma Samtseva and again was maspid my father. There were other such incidents, but I've taken enough of your time relating personal vignettes. Let me conclude with what I believe is a relevant vartara I once heard from the Rav Zatzal. He pointed out that one could not frame a better job description for a manik b'Yisrael than Moshe Rabbeinu himself in responding to his father-in-law's reprimand about Moshe's daily schedule. Ki Elohem davar boilai. When they have a matter, they come to me, says the Rav. That's the manik engaged in chesed. Whatever it might be, a personal problem, a family issue, sometimes intergenerational disputes within a family, whatever the nature of the issue, that, says the Rav, is the manik as the bal chesed. But Moshe goes on, v'shafati ben ish uvein reyehu, and I judge between man and his fellow, says the Rav, that is the manik as posik, whether purely halachic issues or as a dayan resolving disputes between people. That's the manik who is the posik or shofet. Finally, concludes Moshe, v'odata es chukei olakim ves tarasa, and I make known, I teach the decrees of Hashem and his teachings. That, said the Rav, is the manig in his role as Melamed or Rosh Yeshiva. The Rav then went on to list a series of manhigim through the years and point out which of the three categories each was proficient in. Ashrei Hador. Fortunate is the generation that has the ultimate schia to have as its manik, as its mordar, a man that his composite personality combined all three of the attributes described and prescribed by Moshe Rabbeinu for manhigus, the Baal Chesed, the Posek, and the Rosh Yeshiva. Proficient in each, but always the warm, engaging, approachable, pleasant, cordial human being suffused with humility and integrity. Chaval al da'avdin v'lo mishakren. I end as I started. Tzar li olecha, ochi, Aaron, da'amta l'miyot. Thank you.